Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Trash Mix podcast, where we talk about Mexican genre films and crazy Mexican films in general. But today, me and Joey are leaving Mexico, and you're probably thinking, "Why the f what the fuck is going on?"
We turn into passport bros.
Yeah, we went into yeah we got into that trend of passport bros, but we're not after girls, actually. Well, maybe I am, but that's for we'll save that for another day. I'm just joking. But now, but. Today we're going to talk about two films from Colombia, and these are films I actually never heard of before until recently when people were hitting me up. They were like sending me this link to a boutique label I never even heard of either. They were like, "Hey, have you seen these before?" Like they're asking me, like, they think, people assume that I just like a lot of Latin horror in general, which I do, but it's not like something I dig too deep into. And I was like, "Actually, no. Thank you for putting me onto that." So yeah, I kept getting several messages about it. And I was like, "Hey, these are actually kind of cool looking. I kind of want to dig into it." And then Joy was one of the people too that hit me up about it. And then you were the first to buy it, right? I think. Yeah, you were the first to buy it, Joy, the Blu-ray.
Between us or
Yeah,
between everyone we know?
between us. Yeah,
Yeah, between
it
us,
was
yeah,
you.
for sure, yeah.
Yeah, and then you were telling me, yeah, they were cool. And I was like, "Oh shit, fuck yeah!" So then, yeah, I bought the Blu-ray like maybe a week or two after, and I watched them both the same day. And I was just like, "Whoa, these are fucking awesome!" And then I don't know. I got more curious about like the release, the release, the company, and who's behind this. I wanted to know more. And then rather than just hit up the person that's in charge of this, I was like, you know what? I gave Joy the idea. Let's just do it for the podcast. Let's go somewhere a little different. And then Joy was like, yeah. And then what was the mission, Joy? The whole point of this episode? You said you wanted to explore more different Latin genre films.
Yeah, I mean, like I was saying before we went live on air with Anthony, was that I wanted to discuss because you and I talk about this a lot, and we talk about it with other people as well, is the lack of representation of Latin America in home video, especially genre, horror, fantasy, B cinema, whatever you want to call it, and when someone finally releases a disc of like you said, movies that I've never heard of that pique my interest, you know what, we got to talk about this because no one else really is, and it is important because, like I said, it is underrepresented, and we just wanted to shine a little bit more light on it.
Yeah, so we're here with Anthony Napolitano of Petroglyph Media. Say hello, Anthony.
Hello, everybody.
Awesome. Can you tell me how you started this label and why did you want to start this label and why these two movies in particular?
So my interest in this is, I'm 39 years old. I came up around the time that the DVD industry was booming. I've been collecting for years. I think as the years went by and I gathered more and more films, you become kind of jaded and you're kind of always like looking for that next like hit of something that you've never seen before. It becomes almost an addiction. Like you're going into deeper and darker places, corners of cinema that are a bit underrepresented, underseen. And so, I would in college, my girlfriend at the time, she was Colombian. I used to ask, I was like, "Hey, what cinema does Colombia have?" She really couldn't speak to that. And when I would Google it, there were films that didn't really catch my interest. And I would always like look up like, "Are there Colombian horror films?" Nothing would ever come up at the time. And this was back in like 2008. And then eventually, my wife is Colombian. I would ask her if she had ever heard of any genre films from Colombia. She's like, "No." I would always just Google it and see if anything came up. And eventually, Jairo Pinilla's name came up, and I was like, "Wow, this is interesting. This guy has like a nice body of work. Like he's done horror, he's done action." And prior to he hadn't been really out there. I hadn't heard much about him, and it was kind of hard to see the films. So I kind of just sat on that, knowing that he existed, knowing he was out there, knowing that he had created the first Colombian horror film, Funeral Siniestro. And then it wasn't until I think it was the end of 2020 that I just looked him up again. I saw that a site in Colombia was actually streaming his films, and I tried to rent it to watch it for myself, and for whatever reason, it didn't work. And I kind of just put that on the back burner, like, "Oh man, it would have been great if I could have shown this to my son." because, you know, as somebody who's really into genre films, I'm passing that on to my kids. You know, I'm showing them all the stuff that I loved as a kid, you know, because I started as somebody that was into dinosaurs, into monsters, Godzilla, and then eventually that went into, you know, horror movies. So right now, you know, every Saturday we're watching Svengoolie. When I get the chance, we have a drive-in in the Poconos in Pennsylvania, the Mahonan Drive-In, which is only 35 millimeter, and they do great shows throughout the summer. So they have the Schlock-O-Rama. I took them to see Godzilla 1985 on the big screen, Earth versus the Flying Saucers, things like that. You know, I really enjoy connecting with him on that level. And because, you know, I'm half Italian and Puerto Rican, his mother is Colombian, I never, you know, learned to speak Spanish. My mother spoke Spanish. It was just never taught at home, but I wanted to make sure that my sons learn to speak Spanish. So part of that education is watching genre films, you know, usually Mexican genre films is in Spanish so they can watch. So we're watching, you know, El Santo movies. They're at Christmas time, we're always breaking out the René Cardona Santa Claus film, you know, just so that way they can experience something other than the usual, what's mainstream now. Instead of just watching Marvel movies, I want them to see stuff from Latin America and to know that there was a Colombian filmmaker out there that did genre films. That was something that I felt was important to, you know, to be able to show my boys. You know, they already have their Italian heritage is very well represented. You know, that history has been rectified since the 90s. So it was time to show that other half. So I think in 2021, I remember it very clearly. It was New Year's Day. We went into the city. We went to St. Patrick's Cathedral, and my son asked to light a candle for one of the saints. And so we chose Saint Anthony. And I was like telling him he's the saint that'll help you find things that are lost. And so I just did a little prayer asking for his intercession to, you know. At the time I wasn't working because of COVID. It was decided that I would stay home and be with my son because his daycare closed. So, you know, looking at the prospect of finding a new job, I just said a prayer like, you know, help me find something that I really enjoy this year. Help me find something that fulfills me. And then that evening I went home and I was looking at the Jairo Pinilla movie streaming again, and I was like, you know what? I could just probably do this. Why don't I just reach out to these people, see if his films are available to license, and maybe I can do it. And, you know, I have no experience in this industry at all, other than the fact that I'm just a huge fan, that I've been paying attention to the intricacies of how these releases are done, what kind of goes into them. And I just felt like, you know, maybe I do know enough that I could just try my hand at this. And that's kind of how it all started.
That's interesting. What was the reception when you started to reach out to people about, you know, Jairo Pinilla's filmography? Like, were people like, "Oh yeah, for sure," or was that something where they were just kind of like, "Well, why do you want to license that, or why do you care about that?"
So the vibe that I get from him is that he's very like giving to the younger generation. Like I think as somebody who just, you know, taught himself filmmaking and just was doing it all on his own, whenever he gets approached by younger people who want to do the same thing, he's very charitable with his time. And I think that this site was also run by, you know, a local group of film fans in Colombia that, you know, kind of idolize him. So when I spoke with the guy that ran the website, I was like, do you have contact with him? Do you think he'd be interested? And he's like, I just called him up and he said he would be very interested in licensing the films. So from there, it was just like, you know, kind of back and forth on WhatsApp, giving him my ideas and him telling Mr. Pinilla. And then finally, you know, having a Zoom call with him where I kind of like laid it out and, you know, my wife was there with me kind of doing the translation and everything. And you know, I had already kind of done a little bit of research on what companies I would use for doing restoration and just kind of going over that process. And he was very, very much all for it. At the time, I thought that perhaps none of his films had ever been released in the United States. But actually, somebody on Instagram had actually messaged me that Triangulo de Oro actually had a VHS release back in the 80s in the US. Very, very rare. I don't even remember if that was brought up in our conversation. But yeah, this was really, outside of that, none of his films have really gotten much exposure outside of their initial releases in Latin America. So this was, you know, a big deal for him. And yeah, I was just, as somebody who did not have any experience doing this before, I was very happy that he was agreeable to it.
Wow, so one man basically, this is all you. That's crazy. I
Yeah.
mean, awesome. Like, not crazy crazy, but that's like crazy cool.
Yeah. Yeah,
And
especially because sometimes you hear stories where, filmmakers just don't even care about their own work or their own filmography, and it makes it a little bit more challenging. At least you can go directly to the man himself and at least have access to finding elements, like, because I think you used a 35mm theatrical print for Funeral Siniestro, right?
yes. So, like the elements for a lot of his films, unfortunately, it seems a lot of them have been lost. Some of the films that he did later on, like I'm not sure exactly what the story was with Funeral Siniestro, but nothing else existed except for that 35 millimeter print that the National Archives holds. But some of his later films, I think, also got funding from the government, and for whatever reason, they kind of just like seized the negatives and they were just kind of lost. Triangulo de Oro, he has that 1-inch video master that he made back in the day, and he holds on to that. You know, that's with him wherever he goes. And I'm not sure about the status of the other films, but from what our conversation was, that initial Zoom conversation, it does seem that a lot of the elements for most of his films are not really, they're kind of non-existent at this point. There might be video masters, but Funeral Siniestro, I think, was the only one that we had access to actual print material for. So
Yeah, that's very common with a lot of like Latin countries. They just are so careless with negatives and film prints like that. Partly because, yeah, they didn't think about it, archiving in the moment.
yeah.
And also just like, yeah, the government getting in the way. They're just like, whatever, this is garbage, just throw it away. We don't need this.
Yeah, especially if there wasn't a big, international release at the time, they probably can't foresee much of a secondary market, 40, 50 years after the fact. So yeah, he was very happy that, the film was going to get some exposure. So that was like early 2021. We went back and forth a long time kind of doing the contract, just because, like I said, I've never done any of this before. I'm like, what does a contract even look like? Like, what should this be? And I kind of just like downloaded film contracts. I got a book with film contracts, kind of just like went through it and been like, all right, what are the things that I wanted to be in here? I wanted to make sure that, it was more ideal for him than it was for me, because he's taking on the risk of me having the film in my control for 5 years. So I wanted it to be like, he's not losing access to his film, so I can just sit on it. So, everything was more in his favor than it was in mine. Because I wanted him to feel comfortable, because I really appreciated that he was giving me this opportunity. And then it was towards the end of 2021, like in September or October, that we finally got to signing the contracts. My wife's aunt, she lives in Villavicencio. She's a lawyer. We flew her out to Bogota. She met with him and his lawyer. And I was in the middle of work getting the phone calls, and it was like a three-way phone call. It was my wife translating for everyone in Colombia and telling me what they were new things that they were coming up with on the contract, or can we do this, can we do that. And I'm like out in the parking lot, and my bosses are like looking at me, and I'm like,
I'm on lunch, but I'm on lunch, I swear.
but no, everything got finalized. And as soon as I sent over the first wire, then the first payment, they sent me the file for Triangulo de Oro, and then we started making the preparations for them to send the 35 millimeter print here to New York. I, for a long time, tried to see if there was anywhere in Colombia or somewhere in a neighboring country that would do restoration, so that way I wouldn't have to. I felt bad like being responsible for like the last remaining copy of this film. I was like, God forbid it like gets lost on the plane or it gets damaged and it's my fault. So I really didn't want it to come to have to be shipped all the way to the US, but I couldn't find anybody that did that kind of service over there in Colombia. So they were totally fine with it. They said, the National Archives is kind of used to that, they sending their stuff out to other countries to be restored. And so we went with Metropolis Post. So again, with trying to find who was going to do the restoration, just kind of looked in the liner notes of all the Blu-rays that I had, trying to see, okay, what are the companies that do this? First one I was thinking of was, I think it was called Cinerec. They did the restoration for Basket Case, and they're located in New York, but the prices were just like astronomical. And Metropolis Post, much more reasonable. And then the fact that I could go back to Hideo Pinija and be like, hey, I'm having the guys that worked on Eraserhead and Grey Gardens and Pink Flamingos, they're going to be doing the restoration of your film. That felt good to say that. And he was like, oh, very impressed. So that began a whole nother process, where, and like, I have no frame of reference of how long it should take to restore a film. Obviously, I think they had other competing business going on with A24 at the time, but it took almost a year
Damn.
to restore the film. And I don't think that's necessarily because it was the hardest film to go through. I think it was just more a fact that I wasn't like the number one priority, and they were kind of maybe giving me a break on the price and whatnot. But it was just awesome, whenever they would call me in and be like, we need you to come and look at this, and just go to like their private like theater and have them screen it for me and see the progress. The first time that I saw it, I literally like started not crying, like sobbing or anything, but I was like, I had a tear in my eye because I was like, wow, look at what, I've been able to do. Look at how this film, you can see clips on YouTube of how it was, beforehand, because I don't think there's any other clips out there of the restoration, but there's like news programs about Hideo Pinija, and they have clips from the movie, and you can see it's got like the pinkish tint to it, and it's very grainy, a lot of dirt and everything. And then to see it kind of brought back to life and be so clear, I was like, this is amazing. So yeah, that was a whole nother process that took some time. So this has been like a 3 year, kind of not ordeal, but just a long process. Long time coming, yeah.
Yeah, no, but worth it though, because this release is really unique. And then now that we know the history behind it, it's even more unique. It's like, damn, this is like a total, what I want to say, do it yourself. But in other words, you did this all on your own. You put this all together for your curiosity, and then for other people to see it. That's really admiring. Like, I actually really admire you for that. That's
Thank
fucking
you.
awesome, dude. Fuck.
Yeah, it can't be easy doing that, especially having no frame of reference of how you're even supposed to begin, let alone having to negotiate, like you said, and then getting the elements from the National Archive. Like how extensive was the restoration? Like was the print in decent shape, or was it in bad shape? Like
I mean,
how.
it was in decent shape, I guess. Like I had said, the color had kind of faded. It had gotten that pinkish tint to it. It was a bit, dirty, but otherwise, other than that, it wasn't too bad, I would say. And they kind of went over like the process of what they do. There's like certain levels of how much of the dirt and specs they can take off, and they're like, this is going to cost you this much, and if you go to this level, it costs you this much. And I kind of figured, it doesn't have to be like super clean. I don't think that, as genre fans, when it comes to a film like this, you're not expecting like the cleanest image, and you kind of want some of that dirt and grit to it. So I didn't want them to do it like to make it like really shiny or anything like that. I just said, there was a certain level that I was comfortable with, and also at the price point that I was comfortable with, that we just went ahead with, and the results were very pleasing. And also, I just want to say, if anyone had told me how much this thing would have cost overall, I don't think I ever would have done it. I'm very glad.
I can't even imagine how expensive it is to take on a project like this.
I'm glad that I went into it kind of blind and not knowing, and kind of very naive, because so the reason why I thought I could do it was I had some money saved up, and also around that time, my mother had told me, she was going to be selling her house later in the year, and that me and my brother and my sisters were all going to get a little bit of money. So I was like, okay, if I get some of that, then maybe I'll have enough to fund this project. It ended up being much more than that, which is also why it, took some time, because I had to, pay out of pocket for a lot of the stuff. So I'd have to wait until I accumulated enough money to pay for the next, phase of the project. So that's why things kind of move slowly. But yeah, definitely worth it. I wouldn't change a thing about it.
Freaking awesome. I'm like blown away by this story right now. It's just like, damn, the little guy did it. Not a big corporation, not people with big money. It's like just this one guy with the dream and a passion.
Yeah, because I figured his films have been around. I know that it's not they're not the most widely known, but I figured why wait to see if like a Vinegar Syndrome or I don't even know who else would possibly they're like the only company I could possibly foresee or Mondo Macabro. Why wait around to see if one of them, catches wind of it? Let me just go for it and try to do the best job that I can and try to be respectful of this man's art. My biggest regret only is that I didn't get to put any real special features on it. That was really came down to cost. Hiro Benija did share with me a bunch of, news segments that came out around the time of mainly from Triangulo de Oro, but also some interviews that he had. And it was just a matter of not having the money to do the subtitling for those. There is like a special Easter egg. I don't know if anybody has caught this on the main.
I caught it. I caught it. Yeah.
So
I had to tell Joey about it. I was like, Joey, did
yeah,
you
I didn't catch it. Armando told me about it. I watched it. What was it, like 2 or 3 nights ago? I was like, this is actually really fucking cool, man.
Yeah.
You can actually see that. This wasn't it was, well because that was for Triangulo de Oro for the little Easter egg, but you can actually see a line. And not even being hyperbolic, but the line literally wrapping around the fucking block, which goes to show that Jairo Pinilla was a respected filmmaker, and people actually did enjoy going to see his movies.
Yeah, and absolutely, and it's important to keep the films. These films have to be kept in circulation. If they're not in circulation, people forget. My wife's family. I ask around. Anybody have ever heard of this guy? No. People will eventually forget it. Outside of that first generation that would have seen it in a theater, if it's not constantly being reissued on video or playing on TV, then it fades into obscurity. And unfortunately, Jairo Pinilla was kind of in danger of fading into obscurity. He talks about how I guess there was kind of an elitist kind of film group in Colombia that kind of only championed the more artsy films that were made. And he was kind of like pushed aside. They
Sounds
didn't
familiar. That's Mexico right there as well.
Yeah, they didn't see his type of cinema as being respectable or something that they wanted to share with the world as Colombian product. This is not the national image that we want to project. And it wasn't until I think probably like the early 2000s when he started to, there was film students in Colombia that started to reapproach his work and kind of champion him. One of the main guys is Ciro Guerra, who became like the first Oscar-nominated Colombian filmmaker for Embrace of the Serpent. His like college thesis was a short film on Jairo Pinilla. So he's a huge fan, and he was inspired by just the fact that Jairo Pinilla taught himself and just basically became like kind of a one-man industry. That was super inspiring to him. So yeah, it's I feel like it was kind of almost like a part of my duty to my sons, kind of to like preserve this legacy for them. They couldn't care less at this point in their lives, but when they're older, I want to be able to say, hey, I kind of saved this for you because this is kind of your birthright. This is something on the Colombian side of your heritage that I want you to be proud of. So that was kind of a big factor going into it.
Nah, man, I love it, man. I the background is amazing. I love that you're, not only preserving it for, film historians and film fans, but also have that personal touch to it, because a lot of people, well, I don't want to accuse any companies. I'm not even going to finish that sentence, but a lot of the times, I feel like people don't necessarily care enough about their own culture. So to have something like this, something tangible, something that not only they can watch but that their father did, I mean, that's it's amazing, man. I love it. I love to hear it.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, let's kind of segue into it then. I mean, we spoke a little bit about Hideo Pinilla, but let's kind of go a little bit more into him as a person. I mean, there's not really a lot of information out there that I could find. I did read one interview of his in Spanish, where he didn't really talk about himself, talk more about his own movies, but he did have something to say about being against art house cinema and preferring Superman movies over Buñuel movies, which I thought was fucking hilarious.
What's
Something
funny? That's something not a lot of people would say, especially filmmakers. It's like if you talk about Buñuel, you're gonna get looked down upon. But it's like, you know what? Sometimes you just don't have to like that artsy shit. So yeah, that's good. He's honest.
It's funny that he mentioned Superman because one of the issues when he was sending over Triángulo de Oro is the fact that he had used soundtrack cues from Superman in the
Oh shit.
original. And he's like, I'm afraid that this is, you know, that they're gonna find out and I'm gonna get sued. And I'm like, I don't think they're gonna care at this point. But he actually like the soundtrack is something else. Like he had an alternate version with music that he composed, at least that's what he told me. And that's the version that's on the Blu-ray. So anybody don't nobody should think that they're missing out on anything. It's not like it was just, you know, music from Superman, apparently, was what it originally played at in the theaters.
There was something that sounded like Superman now that you mentioned it. Yeah.
It might have still been something
It
in
might have been, yeah, because it was like a little, yeah, something in there. I'm like, why does this sound familiar? But now that you bring that up,
there. But I figured at this point, because I feel like there's like thinking specifically more about like Indonesian films, I noticed like some of them will use music that I'm like, there's no way they got the copyright for that.
Oh
They
no, for
just
sure.
totally took
Yeah.
it. And I don't think anybody's pursuing that legally at this point. So I felt comfortable that it wasn't going to be a problem.
Well, let's talk about the movies themselves, I guess, a little bit. Funeral Siniestro was I guess his first feature film, is that correct?
Yeah, so he had done some shorts in the past. I'm not sure how many, but the people that funded his shorts are the ones that eventually they saw promise in his work and they funded this one. I think he said it was like a trucking company were the ones that gave him the money for it. And yeah, it's like inspired by a memory that he had from childhood where one of his classmates' fathers or father had died, and the whole school like went to go to the wake, and the body was just like out there for everyone to see, and it really affected him. And that was like kind of the impetus for this story.
Oh well, that definitely ties into the funeral scene later on in the movie, because there actually there's a the scene where what's her name is Isabelita Isabel, where she runs into the into well I don't know well you know what look I'm just gonna say it right now let's do you want to spoil the movie or do you not want to spoil the movie? Do we care or not?
No, we can spoil the movie.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, let's spoil it then. So, I mean, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but you know, later on in the movie, at around like the hour mark, there's a funeral scene where this the young girl who's like the main character of this movie, she sees, I won't say who until a little bit later, but she sees a dead body. It starts to come to life, or at least she thinks it comes to life. So, hearing that story of him, kind of being traumatized by seeing a dead person, I mean, is a direct correlation to that scene for sure. I mean, it has to be, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's just interesting to think of like I'm here in the States growing up. I've never, you know, apparently this was a thing back in the day. My mother tells me like in Brooklyn, the Italian families, they would when somebody would die, they would do the wake in the house and stuff, which is not something that happened in my lifetime. But I don't know what preparation there was done, but like if somebody died, invite the family over, we're going to lay out the body on the bed, and that's kind of like how it was done. I've never really heard that outside of I think in one of the there's a documentary for Ruggero Deodato where he kind of talks about something very similar where he have to, you know, somebody dies, the body is left in the house, everyone has to come and see it. I mean, we do the same thing with the wake, but there's more a little bit more preparation at a funeral home. So I just kind of found that aspect of it culturally interesting that the body is just kind of there in the house. She's got to stay with it overnight. Definitely would freak me out.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah. They do that in Mexico, actually, like literally, and then they'll plan the funeral like for the day after, 2 days after, so it's very
Yeah,
easy
Mexico
process.
is real quick. I remember when my grandma passed. I mean, when we got the news that she passed, we were on a flight that night because they were like, "We're not waiting for you guys. You're either here in the morning or you're not." And we're like, "Fuck! All right, let's go." Hopped on a flight immediately. So yeah, they don't, you know.
And then the wakes will be at the house. Usually it'll be like right in the living room or in their bedroom. And then that's when they go to the funeral. So it's like a cultural type of thing, you know, like ethnic culture type of thing where it's like, yeah, have the person, the deceased person at their home before they go.
Let's talk. Who were the actors? And do you have any type of history of the actors? Because I mean, obviously, you know, none of us are really gonna know who they are. But were
Yeah,
they?
unfortunately, I don't know too much about the actors, and to be honest, I don't have too much background information about the films themselves. I didn't really get to talk with Jairo at length about it during that initial call that we had. And truth be told, I had not seen the films until after I had licensed them, so I had no idea what I kind of had only had a gist of what they were about, and I had seen enough clips to know that I wanted to release them, but I hadn't actually watched them fully through. So it was kind of just going on faith alone that it was going to be something that I would enjoy.
You get it, and it's whack.
Yeah, from what I'm seeing, it looks like a lot of the actors were just like once. That's it. That was the only time
Yeah,
they ever started in a movie.
I don't think it was anybody, and there to begin with, there's not a big there's not really no film industry to speak of. It definitely wasn't at the time. There only would have been actors from like local telenovelas or something like that, but I don't think anybody was at that level that were in these films. I think they were maybe local theater actors or people that he knew that were in the movie. But I'm hoping to have a more lengthy discussion with him because me and my family were going to go to Colombia in the summer. We just booked our flights, so I'm going to be reaching out to him and his people and seeing if we can set up a day that we'll be able to meet, and I'll be able to have that more in-depth conversation with him about the films and his career.
Oh yeah, man,
That's
that'd
awesome.
be great,
Yeah,
yeah.
make a documentary out of him.
Yeah.
Well, how about this? Let you, Anthony, set up the synopsis, if you will, of Funeral Siniestro for the people that haven't seen it. Why don't you just give them like a little 2 to 3 sentence breakdown of what the movie's about?
So, Funeral Siniestro, it's about this young girl. Her father has just passed away. Now her uncle's going to make the arrangements for everything that has to be done now that he's passed. In the meantime, she has to stay at their hacienda out in the country with her stepmother, who we're getting the vibes may have been the one that kind of that offed her father. And you can tell right off the bat that this woman does not appreciate this girl. She wants her out of the picture. And things kind of just escalate from there without giving away too much. Yeah, I think that kind of sets it up pretty much. This girl is basically stuck in the house with her wicked stepmother and who basically wants her out of the picture, and things kind of go from there.
Yeah, and her stepmom was like fucking like super brutal, super mean and aggressive towards her. I mean, I don't know where that disdain for the stepdaughter came from, but yeah, she fucking hated her guts, man. I don't know if it was that or she just wanted more control of the property and the inheritance itself, but
I feel like there's a line in there where she says like that she was the result of like her husband's philandering or something like that. So I'm not sure. But yeah, there's definitely there's money that she's after.
Yo no pude tener hijos, pero tampoco voy a permitir que mi esposo me haya dejado este fruto de sus aventuras. Y además, tener que compartir mi herencia con ella.
As always.
It always comes down to money, doesn't
Yeah.
it? Yeah, the thing that I liked about this movie a lot was that it definitely it's definitely a slow burn. So you know, listeners and eventual viewers, beware that if you're not into slow burn movies, you might have an issue with it. But to me, it only made everything a little bit more effective because this kind of has like that 70s moody, very brooding, crude, but not in a derogatory sense, vibe to it that to me plays better late at night, you know, maybe even midnight movie to watch.
That's what I was gonna say. This is like the perfect movie to watch in the dark. You don't have, you can't watch this in the daytime. You have to, it has to be lights out, dark outside, because that's pretty much how the movie feels. It's just like a dark movie. Gives it that vibe for sure.
I love the score on it. Like, it's just, it's so, it's got a very lo-fi retro feel to it. Only could have come out of the 70s. It's just, that really sets the tone for me, that score at the very beginning.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, that opening funeral scene was just like, man. You know, it's like depressing, but then you're also getting creeped out too. Like, you know something's going to go down later, you know?
But even, like, it's like, you know, like you said, the soundtrack, it's very like, and again, this is not derogatory, but it's like elementary electronic soundtrack. But it fits the vibe of this movie so well, because a lot of the times, like, the camera moves, it's not like an Italian movie where you're getting all these crashes, zooms and stuff like that. The camera moves very slow throughout this entire the entire movie, and the soundtrack plays along with that, as well as like kind of like the background elements of what's going on at the property, and when she's outside and she's talking to everybody, like, everything moves so, I don't know what the word it is that I'm looking for, but everything moves so slow, but in unison, if that makes sense.
You know, and there's definitely like some gorgeous shots, like just like these slow pans, like when she's burying the body, Lucrecia's burying the body outside. We get this like really slow, like, vista of kind of her like moving the body, or the scene, when Isabel is with some of the other family members, and it kind of just like hovers over their reactions, their faces. There's just some quality stuff in there for like a first time filmmaker. That's like very impressive.
Yeah, exactly. Like being your first, feature length film. I mean, he knocked it out of the park. You know, it's only what, an hour, 45 minutes, something like that. And not a lot happens, because it all takes place in one central location, but what does happen is very impactful to how it sets up the ending of the movie. Like the stepmother has like these weird, I don't know if she's a witch or she's just like a black magic practitioner or what, but there's like that scene where she's like lighting candles and smoking a cigar with like a skull in this dark, you know, dank room.
Like little Santeria set up.
Yeah.
That was fucking crazy. I was like, oh shit, what's this lady up to now? She's already mean. It's like, now she's a witch too or what? She's so bad.
And that's kind of like where like the craziness starts, right? Because that's when she, you know, the first death takes place at that scene, if I'm not mistaken. She finds out that what was his name? Jaime, he's like the house, not the housekeeper, but like the house help. It's like spying on her, so she's like, man, fuck this fool, and decides she wants to kill him.
De modo que te dedicas a espiarme? ¿Qué te pasa?
Nada. Ya me voy.
Ah, sí. ¿Vas a contar lo que sabes? Pues te equivocas. Tú no sales de aquí.
Just like nothing to him. This lady's mean. She just does not give a fuck. And you just like hate her. You're just like, fuck, hopefully something bad happens to her.
And she's then, like, yeah. every evil stepmom in every movie that's ever been portrayed, right? Yeah. And then there's also like, I lost my train of thought. What was I gonna say? Oh no, like the setup between character, like, you know, we learned that the stepmom was in cahoots with the neighbor, who obviously had a beef with Umberto, who, in, you know, ironically is played by Jairo Pinilla, right? He's like the uncle, the now stepfather.
Yeah, he actually stars in quite a, I think he's got like a small role in pretty much all of his films. So yeah, it's just interesting to see him, you know, in that time. Yeah, I don't know where I'm going with that.
No, you're good. No, but it is cool though. Like, he's in the movie. He's not just making a cameo. Like, he's actually in the movie.
Yeah.
This ain't no Hitchcock cameo. It's like, nah, this is him acting too.
Well, it's funny because, like, throughout this entire movie, while, you know, Isabel is being tortured and traumatized by her stepmom, this fool's out, you know, in Bogota on business. And, you know, there's a scene where he's just in the club, like, fucking dancing it up, and, like, chilling with a couple girls in a club where the band is playing. And he has no idea that any of this is happening, which I find kind of funny. I don't know if that's intentional humor, but
not until like the ending. Yeah, that's when he finally goes back, and then all this stuff has happened. It's like, damn, bro, where were you?
I guess he was meeting one of his lawyers at that club or something to tie up loose ends.
Yeah. Yeah, he was like trying to finalize like the inheritance and like the of like the property and stuff, right?
That's what he was going to do.
Yeah. Ain't no better place to deal business than inside a club while a band is playing, you know.
Y estos son los bavaros. La mujer que tiene a varios no es mala si no entendida. La mujer que tiene varios no es mala si no entendida. Cuando una vela se apaga, las otras quedan prendidas. Cuando una vela se apaga, las otras quedan prendidas. Dame tu calor,
porque tengo frío.
Si me das tu amor,
yo te doy el mío.
Ay, dame tu calor,
porque tengo frío.
Si me das tu amor,
yo te doy el mío.
But there is like a cool, like there's like a, I don't know what relevance it has to the movie at all, because it didn't really feel like it contributed to much. But there's a scene where there's like a solar eclipse. That's like the halfway point of the movie.
Yes.
I was reading that was like a real event that happened. That's like a known thing that happened in Colombia, where it was visible from Bogota. And I forgot that there was a couple other cities that I guess were affected by that were able to see it, which I thought was kind of cool, because at first I thought it was just an effect, but to find out that it was a real event, they were just like, fuck it, put the camera up and let's record this.
I don't know if it has any bearing on the story itself, but it definitely was probably something that was going on at the time of shooting, and they said this will just be something cool to add into the film. And I think it does kind of, it adds to the mood, it kind of adds to the otherworldliness of what's happening right now. Good, you know, stroke of brilliance to insert that into the film. It kind of adds to the atmosphere.
Yeah, well, it plays like the halfway point, because once that happens, then you have the funeral, obviously, that takes place, which is like the last, what, like 40 minutes, 45 minutes of the movie. Because before that, it's all just like the, you know, the scenes of the stepmom, you know, being, for lack of a better word, being a witch with a capital B, and then finally it happens. You know, she ends up killing herself by tripping on like a on some branches, and you know, impales herself on a tree that was cut by the, what was his name, Jaime, which I thought was like good. And I, you know, the funny thing is when that's the first scene of the movie, when he's chopping down trees with the machete. And they zoom into that, you know, just like a left branch. I was like, oh, something crazy is going to happen with this. And sure enough, you know, she ends up killing herself on it.
Yeah.
Everything is aligned.
You know, it's funny. One thing that I read online, which I think makes this kind of a cool, you know, for the haters that are going to say that this isn't a Mexican episode. There is a Mexican tie in here. And I don't know if you're aware of this, Anthony, or not, but I read that this movie was released on the same day as El Patrullero 777, which is a Cantinflas movie, who obviously Mexican fans will know is a Mexican comedian. So there's the tie-in, folks, for all the listeners that want to be haters. This does have to do with Mexico in some way, even if it's a small way.
Also, Jairo Pinilla, when he was, I think, like in his early 20s, he was working for a company in Mexico, and on his off time, he would go to Churubusco Studios and like hang out with the actors there and kind of like see them, you know, putting together the sets and taking them apart and whatnot. I think there's interviews of him speaking about like watching those classic films from the golden age of Mexican cinema that were like very inspiring to him. And that's why he wanted to visit those places when he was there.
Yeah, the golden age of Mexican cinema that like inspired all of Latin cinema later on. So that's how it all started for like Latin cinema in general. Mexico started it, and then these other countries saw it and were like, "Whoa, you know, we need to make movies like this too. You know, we got stories to tell. These are awesome." So yeah, it's awesome that he was inspired by Mexican cinema and then he went on to his own and basically started Columbia Cinema.
Yes, so I guess, so before him, there wasn't really anything of horror, was there?
I've read that there were some films, but I haven't, you know, I just see titles. I don't really find much information on what the films were about or more than that. But I think for him, for Funeral de Cinero, it's pretty much considered the very first Colombian horror film. I think there might have been one other film that came out. It's kind of like debatable which came out first. But yeah, really there wasn't much before that, and not there hasn't been like a succession of horror films out of Colombia, unfortunately. The only other one that I know of from like 82, there's a film called Pura Sangre, which is by another pretty well-known Colombian director, Luis Ospina. And he was kind of there was a group of filmmakers out of Cali that you know, originally Jairo Pinilla is from Cali, but he moved to Bogota. There was like a group, like a cinema club there that kind of gave birth to some of these more artistic filmmakers, Luis Ospina being one of them. And I think he kind of dabbled in horror, but it wasn't nothing full blown. I think that particular film, it's about like a sugar plantation owner who's like dying, and his he needs blood transfusions to survive, and his kids, they go out and they basically kill people from like, but they're upper class, and they kill people from like the lower classes and drain them of their blood so that way their aging father can stay alive. Great film.
Yeah, that one's crazy. I've seen it before. I actually have it on VHS under Traficantes de Sangre, if I recall, which is blood traffickers. But yeah, that movie's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
I gotta add that to the watch list.
Yeah, that's probably like another one to watch after. Like, if you're really into Funeral Siniestro, you gotta watch this one as well. This is like another must-see Colombian horror film as well.
Yeah, but outside of that, I'm not too familiar with it there being much outside of what Jairo Pinilla had done.
Well, we do know that he ended up making, I guess, for lack of better genres, action adventure film, which would be Triangulo de Oro, aka the Triangle of Gold. What can you say about this movie? How, like, set this up for the listeners.
I think this is one of his favorite films, just because it had the widest release. He got to go film in Panama for this one. It's very much like it's following the same trend as a lot of those knockoffs that came out of Italy in the wake of Indiana Jones, only with Colombian flavor to it. It's you know, there's an island that has a treasure. There are, you know, pirates, or not pirates per se, but there's like a nefarious group that's after this treasure map, and this family that kind of gets caught up in it. And you know, you've got everything from like man-eating vines, these rocks that glow and, you know, make blood come out of your face. There's a amazing like battle, barroom brawl towards the beginning of the film. Yeah, it's just it's not very common to see that type of a film done, you know, on that in that kind of low budget sense, that DIY sense, to try to tackle something so grand. Definitely a very fun film.
Was he
Very
trying to? So my question is, was he trying to make like a family movie with this movie, or was he just, you know, just making an adventure film in general? Because I don't know, it came off as a family friendly film at first, but then it gets to a little crazy after. So I was always wondering, who was he trying to market this movie to?
it does feel like it's got he's going for a more general audience. I don't know if it was intentionally meant to just be a family film, but yeah, he's definitely trying to broaden the appeal of it by having the child be like a such a main focus.
Yeah, that's how I was like, is this a movie for kids? But then there's blood, and then there's these like ugly little monsters coming in. I was like, okay, I don't think this is for kids. But maybe it was at first. I don't know. I was a little confused, but it was cool. But I was just like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah, this definitely has the feel of like an Al Adamson like kitchen sink type movie where, you know, you got, you know, action adventure, but then it kind of pivots into like this like supernatural movie. You got a kung fu guy, or not even a kung fu guy, he's a karate guy, like a Chinese karate guy with the worst dubbed Asian accent of all time. That funny enough felt like it had a little bit of like a Spanish accent as well.
Ese chango leo lo vale millones. No podemos abandonar la idea al encontrarlo. Intentémoslo una vez más.
But then, like you said, you have like just tons of gore. You know, you have like these trees that are killing people that, you know, kind of akin to Evil Dead style, where, you know. So this movie just kind of goes all over the place, but I think that's what makes it so enjoyable, is that you will find something about this movie that you like, guaranteed.
Yeah, and I definitely, when I was trying to figure out which movies to license from him, you know, I went with Funeral Siniestro because obviously it's status as being the first Colombian horror film. But then I also thought, got to go for Triangulo de Oro just because it has that appeal. Like, it looks exciting. And I felt like that would be, you know, a good counterpoint to kind of like this, to have this slow paced brooding, horror film next to this more fast paced adventure film.
Did he have any input as to what, or any suggestions of what you should have released, or was he just like, whatever you want, I'm all game?
Yeah, he had no suggestions. I kind of told him, you know, what films I wanted, and he was fine with that. I asked him if he wanted to have any input. Like, I was down to, if he was willing to record a commentary, I would have done that at that, you know, during that initial conversation, but he was not interested.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, you know, in speaking about the special features, to go back to that, I also had asked, cause there was a documentary film made about him in 2019, by a Colombian filmmaker. And I had asked, you know, are you in contact with that guy? Are the rights available to that? Because I would love to get my hands on that. And him and the other guy that worked for that website, that were kind of, I don't know, they gave off the vibe that the person who made that film would not be willing to license it to me for whatever reason. I never really got any understanding on why that would be, but it was kind of like the vibe was just like, don't pursue that. So I never did. And I probably wouldn't have had the money to get that as well, in addition to the other two films, to the two films. So yeah,
well, maybe that'll be a something down the line that you can add or something. But yeah, it does seem strange that the unofficial fan club, I guess you could say, would be like, nah, you don't want to mess with that guy or that project.
Yeah,
I think it's time for you to make your own English friendly.
That would be sick, though.
Yeah, I could see it.
What do you know as far as like, was this shot on 35mm or was it 16mm? Do you know any of that information?
I don't know that information. I think it was shot on 16mm.
It does look like 16, yeah.
Well, let's get into it a little bit. I mean, as you said, it was shot in Panama at the Panama Canal. I read on that same interview that I was reading, I guess that was like a deliberate thing. I guess Colombian moviegoers didn't want to watch a movie that was made in Colombia or that was spoken in Spanish. So he went to Panama to film it. So it had like, you know, a foreign film, you know, I guess, vibe to it. But then I read that it was released dubbed in English with Spanish subtitles, which seems, I don't know if that's a thing or, you know, how true that is. I don't know if you know if that exists or.
Well, and I think I saw the same article, and he had spoken briefly about that when we talked over Zoom. I don't know if it was for Triangulo de Oro or if it was for another film that he did later on, because there's one other film that he did after that that I could have sworn was the one that he had it dubbed in English, so that way it could appear as an American film, and it would have a more of an appeal, kind of like how the Italians would always anglicize the names on the cast credits so they could sell the movie as being an American
film. Yeah,
that would sell better. So I know that he did that. I don't know if that was done for Triangolo de Oro, but I know in his filmography there is a film that he did have dubbed into English because he thought that it would sell better if it was passed off as an American product. That's kind of the vibe. If the country is not, you know, producing, is not mass producing, you know, cinema, and the kind of general vibe is, you know, the imports that we're getting are much more entertaining than we don't want to go see it, then of course you're going to try any way that you can to get your film in front of your domestic audience. So I think that's where that kind of came from.
Yeah. And this movie was pretty successful, right? Cause this is all referencing one interview that I read. Cause like I said, there wasn't a lot to go on to find more information, but, he said that he had a deal in place with United Artists to distribute this movie to foreign markets. That's kind of crazy, but I guess that deal fell through.
I feel like I've seen like a newspaper ad for the film that did have the United Artists logo underneath it. So I'm not sure where it played. Maybe if it possibly was other countries in South America that they distributed it. Obviously, I don't think, you know, like I said, it had gotten a VHS release in the U.S., but I don't think that was part of the United Artists deal. I don't think that they were the ones that licensed it out to the U.S., but I could be wrong about that.
Yeah. All right, well, let's kind of talk about the movie a little bit. I mean, this one, like we said, you know, it's like an action movie, so, but it also has supernatural, I guess, tendencies, if you will. It's kind of like the main character. What was his name? God damn it! What is it? William, right? No. William was
the main dude is Jack.
Yeah, the main dude is Jack. There you go, Jack. And he's like a big burly dude. You know, he's got a bald head. He's got earrings on. He looks like he's straight out of an Indiana Jones movie. But I don't. I there was like a part of this where it almost felt like they were they played as flashbacks. Now, I don't know if I just picked up something wrong or am I right to say that there were some of these scenes were flashbacks to things that had already happened?
Not that I recall. I could be wrong too because I haven't watched it myself in quite some time. It's funny. So during, more so for Funeral Sinestro, whenever I hear, like, I would hear directors talk about like how they hadn't seen their own film in like 20 years, I'd be like, I love this film. How could you not have watched it like every day? But when you have to like sit through the restoration of the film and you've seen it, like I had to sit through Funeral Sinestro so many times that I finally was like, I can't watch it again. I told my wife because I had to sit through it to see like how the progress was going. So I watched it numerous times. And not that I did the same thing for Triangolo de Oro, but I have watched it quite a bit, but it's been a while for me. So I don't recall if there are any scenes that were specifically flashbacks. There might have been.
If I recall, yeah, they were kind of like little flashbacks, I guess, to kind of understand what exactly is going on and why are they going over there. So it does play off like that.
Actually. Yeah, it was like somewhere in the middle of the movie where Jack, it almost felt it, like he was remembering things that had already happened, but then they played out later in the movie. So I was a little bit confused. Like, is this entire thing a flashback or what the fuck is going on here?
Siempre vas a viajar.
Sí. Cuando salga ese barco.
No creo necesario que arriesgues tu vida en esa forma. Tú mismo has comprobado la cantidad de embarcaciones que después de pasar por este canal han desaparecido misteriosamente. Y tu hija también desapareció. ¿O ya te olvidaste de eso? Ahora debes enfrentarte a tu nuevo hogar. Vas a sacrificar tu vida por un tesoro que tal vez no existe.
Lo sé, pero necesito que cuides a mi hijo.
Sí, y no solamente a Henry, sino también a mi hermana, que posiblemente quedará viuda.
Um,
it might have been a flashback to when he's speaking with when they show Jairo Pinilla's character, who's his brother-in-law. I could have sworn there's a scene like that where he's telling him not to go to the island. I could be wrong.
Either way, the movie it's kind of all over the place. That's the vibe too. It's like it goes all over the place. There's this flashback going on, then they're at the island, and then you think just they're after the treasure, but then there's these monsters. Yeah, the movie's just everywhere. It's a pretty crazy watch for sure. So you're gonna be like, your head's gonna be spinning when you watch this movie for sure.
Especially when you hear the screech from the actual gold triangle.
I was not expecting that. At first, I thought it was my TV. See, that was the funny part. I'm like, you know, I just moved into this new house, and I'm like, oh, hopefully nothing's broken. And I hear the screeching sound from the movie, and I'm like, oh, fuck, is this TV broken? And it's like, oh, no, it's the movie. That screeching sound. Oh, my fucking God. That was traumatizing. I can't even imagine watching it in the theater. Imagine in the theater, it's fucking loud.
Well, you wouldn't be able to escape it in the theater. When I was watching it, I had to turn the volume down because I was like, oh, that screech plays for like, it feels like 10, 15 minutes.
Okay, we got to play that at theater. And I need to see an audience reaction to that screech because that was just crazy.
Do you, Anthony, do you have rights to screen this theatrically? Like,
no, but I'm sure that if I asked him, he would give me permission. I think he would be down for that, especially if I said it was, you know, as part of the promotion. But no, my rights are basically just for this release. Like, I don't even have streaming. And I remember when I was getting the restoration, then they were like, "You don't have streaming rights? That's where everything's going. That's crazy. You need the streaming rights." And I was just like, nobody. I'm thinking the audience for this film are people like me, where it's like, I am not. You know, I want to own this. I don't want to stream it. I want to own this physically, and I want to hold it in my hand. Like, I don't want it to be, like, it's just going to get lost. If it's on streaming, it's just going to get lost in all the other thumbnails of all the other,
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Yeah, like, you'll know it's there, but then it's like, are you ever going to click it, though? But it's like, if you have the disc in your hand, you're like, hey, I'm going to probably put this on, you know? And that's literally what I did when I first got it. I got it in the mail. I'm like, oh, let's put it on. I want to watch it. Streaming, it's like, oh, add it to the queue, and then you never fucking watch it.
Yeah, movies like this that don't already have like a built-in audience, they streaming is where they go to die.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, without the, you know, the physical copy, people aren't going to be as willing to watch this if they didn't already pay you know, the price of getting this Blu-ray in, you know, because if it's on streaming, like you said, thumbnail app, pass it, and then eventually the streaming rights die, and then you have no access to it, you know. So,
and this is a cool release too. It's like, it's quality. The slipcase is really nice. And how much was it in total? Like $20-some. It's like, come on, when can you buy a Blu-ray for like less than $30 nowadays?
Well, originally it went for sale for $30, and okay, there for like a month, and nobody touched it. It also might have been not getting the best promotion at the time, but I kind of figured, you know, maybe $30 is a lot to ask of people at this point in with the economy the way it is, and it's a film that nobody has heard of. Maybe I gotta bring it down to make people more willing to take the chance on it. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what led to that.
No, I mean, either way though, I mean, there's people that are paying like $60 for a Hollywood movie that's on Blu-ray or 4K, and it's like, nah.
Man, you know, there's people paying $60 for a movie they've never seen.
Yeah.
It's so,
like, yeah, take a chance with this one. This is less than $30, and it's really nice. Like I said, the slipcover art is really nice for both movies.
Yeah.
Like,
so
every collector's dream is right here. It's like, you got your slipcase that's quality, and you got your two crazy-ass movies in there that you're going to for sure watch, you know?
Yeah, so when I got to the point where I was doing the slipcover, I reached out to Jesse Nelson, the guy that runs Diabolik DVD and yep, Cultural Films, and I was like, hey, where do you go to get your stuff done? Can you give me any leads? And he was very gracious enough to kind of tell me, you know, some people, some vendors to use at that point where I was in the process, you know, in terms of like the mastering and the authoring of the disc and whatnot. So he was very helpful. And actually when Diabolik, you know, it was maybe 2 years ago that I had actually emailed him about it. So when the movie came out, he emailed me, obviously not remembering that we had communicated before, asking for some copies of the movie. and he's in New Jersey, close to to Philadelphia. So I was like, I'll just, you know, drive the 2 hours over there and bring you all these movies, because I also didn't know how to ship the amount of movies that he had asked for, because I only have like the boxes to ship, just like, because I said on the website, you know, limit of two per order, and I can only ship two because I have no idea how to accommodate any larger orders than that. So I was like, I'll just put him in a bunch of crates and come down. And I you know, I got to meet him, got to take a little tour of the Diabolik warehouse, which was really awesome. And yeah, hopefully, you know, sometime in the future, me and him will talk shop more, and I can kind of like compare notes. Like, did I do this right? Or how, you know, how do you, as somebody who's a bit more experienced in this game, I kind of want to pick his brain on like, how do you do this? Did I do things the right way? Should I have done it this way? You know, things like that. But he was very helpful.
For a first release, this is awesome. Like I said, I'm holding it in my hands right now. I'm like, this is fucking awesome. You would think like another label put this out, but no. This is, like I said, one man, one man's dream. This is like a fan release, basically, but a legit one, you know? This is awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
How has the titles been selling? Like, are people finally catching wind of it?
Yeah, no, it's definitely been... been selling consistently, I'll say that. Things have kind of slowed down again. I got to do a little bit more promotion on it, I think. One of the people on Instagram, like the Disconnected, posted about it, and that was just like a huge boost. Like whenever somebody posts about it, there's always like a flurry of sales. So those always help. Whenever somebody orders and then, you know, puts a picture up about it, then I reach like, you know, a bunch of other people. But no, the response has been really good. It's really great. You know, one person on Instagram reached out to me and told me how happy they were about the release. They actually posted something really, really nice about it. And it was like the kind of feedback that I got was like was what I was looking for, because like I said, I'm always on the hunt for something that I haven't seen before that kind of scratches that itch. You know, I film is like a passport to another, to other countries, to other times. And to hear that that's what this was for somebody else, you know, is very pleasing. And also I've gotten messages from people that are Colombian and, you know, were really thankful that I released this, that they said that, you know, that they themselves did not know about Jairo Pinilla. They're horror fans. They're Colombian. They didn't know that these films existed. So, you know, awesome. To hear that is amazing.
That is awesome. Yeah. You love it. Especially with me, with the whole Trash Mic thing, the podcast, the blog, people be like, yeah, you know, I live in Mexico and I never even heard of this movie. So, you know, it's awesome. I want to know more. It's like, how do you not know? It's like, what? And then, of course, I understand later why. You know, it's always because of culture differences and then just the lack of access to some of these movies. So I could imagine it's the same for, obviously, Colombia as well. It's like they only had access to so much and not really know much about this stuff until much later on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, hopefully it reaches people in Colombia so they can, you know, take part of their own history in cinema, because as you said, Armando, like watching movies that are, you know, made from and made for your own culture, there's nothing better than that, really. I mean, that's kind of like how you said earlier, Anthony, is like you kind of learn the language that way as well. Like, so I mean, there's a lot of people that don't speak Spanish or that aren't as connected to their own culture, and maybe it's like the smallest way to introduce yourself to your own culture, but watching movies is definitely a good gateway into learning about yourself and learning your own history. And like I said, hopefully, you know, people in Colombia can get their hands on this. I don't know if you're able to sell internationally or not, but hopefully they find a way to get these restored and see them in full glory, you know.
No, absolutely. No, and you know, that is, again, going back to that cultural aspect, you know, my cinema is my language. That is how I connect with my culture. And, you know, that's not, you know, as you're creating your identities, like, so for myself, you know, finding out about Dario Argento, Mario Bava, Lucio Fulci, that was like a huge part of, you know, my teenage years, my identity, because being Italian, what did that, I didn't know what that meant. Who are supposed to be my idols? Who are supposed to be the people I look up to? Like Frank Sinatra, John Gotti. Like, I don't know who,
John Gotti.
Who's the person that, you know, am I supposed to identify with in my culture? And then finding these Italian film directors was like opening up this whole new world for me. And I was like, okay, these are my people. And I think that, you know, it helps to see it certainly helps to see people in your own culture doing the things that you love, especially if it's not like something that's widely accepted. I always wish that there was more on the Puerto Rican side in terms of genre filmmaking. You know, that I struggle to see if there's any, you know, Puerto Rican horror or science fiction. I do know that there was one like superhero movie that was made in the 90s that I'm kind of interested in seeing if I could get that released. But, you know, there's not a lot of domestic cinema that was made in Puerto Rico, but it, you know, at least I had the Italian stuff to kind of hold me over. But yeah, no, just it's inspiring. It's inspiring to have that connection.
So do you plan on releasing any more of Jairo's work? Because I mean, there's a short that I really like. I mean, I haven't seen it, but I've seen the trailer. It's the La Silla Satanica. That trailer was pretty fucking crazy. I'm intrigued.
It's a short film.
Yeah, La Silla Satanica by Jairo Pinilla. It looks like it's only 47 minutes long. I could be wrong, though. But yeah, it looks pretty fucking sick, though. It looks like it was shot on tape as well.
Nice.
It's like awesome. A possessed wheelchair and the little girl's like falling off it or something. I think you need to hit up Jairo about it again.
Yeah. I would definitely be interested in releasing more of his films. I think whatever my next release is, it's probably not going to be another Jairo Pinilla, just because I don't want to... I would be a... Because this was such an endeavor, especially financially, I wouldn't want to just become the Jairo Pinilla guy and just only focus on his films. So definitely the next release would probably be something different.
Okay.
You know, I named the company Petroglyph just because I wanted it to be kind of undefinable. I really didn't know. My focus was just getting these two films out, and I do want to continue. But what direction I go in, I'm really open to anything. A lot of people have just kind of gotten the sense that it would be just Latin American films. And I'm totally fine with that. If I can continue in that. But there was never like a set plan of like, you know, I'm just going to focus on these, you know, a specific region and genre or anything. I was kind of just leaving it kind of wide open to see what I could accomplish, what I could get my hands on. Yeah,
well, that's totally understanding. Yeah, no, yeah, for sure. But like I said, I think you're the man to continue Jairo's work, you know, at least not again soon, but later on down the line, I think.
Yeah, no, I would like to take another stab at
that. I just can't imagine anybody else doing it and then giving it the love and admiration. It's like, yeah, you got to do it again, you know.
Yeah.
Next release, I mean, whatever you have planned, I mean, I look forward to it, you know, whatever it is. I don't care what it is, but whatever you got planned, I'm for it, you know.
Thank you.
Can't wait, you know.
Anthony, is there anything that we didn't talk about today that you would like to talk about or that we missed or skipped over anything?
Nothing. I mean, we were going to talk about the underrepresentation of Latin American cinema, I guess, on DVD or Blu-ray as a whole. Kind of to go into that, I think we're in a better place that we were in back in the DVD era. Certainly, I feel like as there's more boutique labels popping up, and as like the major studios are kind of like divesting from doing their own releases, I think we're gonna get to a point where certain labels are gonna have to start digging deeper and deeper to find, you know, more films. And I think we're going to see, I would hope that we're going to see a lot more stuff in the future from Latin America. Just on the fact that, like, how many times can we release, what was it? You know, Vinegar Syndrome today had The Golden Child. Like, I was kind of just.
Yeah. I know. I know the reaction. You don't have to say it.
Yeah. And I'm not.
I will say though that the Golden Child is definitely one of Eddie Murphy's best movies, but at the same time, yeah, I mean, how many different times do we need to? And I guess for people that don't own that movie already, this will probably be the definitive one to get. But it would be nice to see, you know, a catalog expand into different territories instead of kind of rehashing the same movies that are constantly being put out, you know.
And I don't want, and I want to take that back. I don't want to sound overly negative because I know I was excited about Congo.
Now, Congo was unusual, but it made sense though. At the same time, yeah, I get it.
Hey, I don't stand for revisionist history, man. Congo was a fucking banger when it came out, man. Anyone who says otherwise is a liar.
Oh,
man.
Yeah,
that movie was the shit.
That shit was the shit. I even had to watch for Taco Bell and everything, so I remember that movie.
But I mean, we've come a long way, and just thinking specifically kind of about Mexican genre films, we've from like the DVD era when we had the Casa Negra releases to now what we have from Indicator or the BCI releases of the Galindo movies. Now those have all been upgraded in amazing, you know, amazing additions.
Yeah, we could only hope for more, because I always say there's so much more than just what we're already seeing. It's like there's just so much more. And hopefully, you know, yeah, we do get more. And then people start to appreciate, you know, Latin America as a whole and films, you know, because I feel like Latin films, like especially genre stuff, is still so underlooked, you know, so underappreciated.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I don't mean to cut you off, but I was just going to say, I mean, and I know this isn't like the greatest thing to be like the standard go to, but you look at like Sight and Sound's top 100. I think there was only like 6 Latin American movies that were listed on that, which is crazy. Because I mean, you know, we're all fans of European horror, Eurosleaze. We're all fans of the classics. Asian cinema is going through like a crazy revival right now, and that's not to say that these movies aren't great and don't deserve restoration and releases and stuff, but I mean, the globe is huge, man. There's so many different nooks and crannies of the world that has cinema that's begging to be released, and you know, audiences that want them, you know, and that's all we're asking for, man. We're just asking for people to expand and you know, maybe it's the fact that, you know, the audience isn't there financially, you know, people aren't paying to buy it. I don't know, but these movies are worthy of it, you know.
Absolutely. Like I said, you guys gotta watch more Mexican movies. You guys gotta watch more stuff from Spain. I mean, Spain's European, but you know what I mean. There's still so much Spain genre cinema that needs to be seen. And then of course we got, you know, Colombia here. It's like, man, you know, who would have thought there was some Colombian horror films out there, you know, that needed to be seen. And here we are with one of them, you know. And then a crazy Indiana Jones knockoff that I would have never known existed until right now, you know, if it wasn't for Petroglyph Media, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the point, right? You know, we need someone like Anthony and Petroglyph to be releasing mm-hmm. these movies so that people are aware of them, you know? You know, exactly. It's hard to say that there's no audience for it when no one is caring enough to put it out there, you know?
Yeah, if people don't know it exists, then, you know, they're not going to... We're never... Like, I'm not... Wouldn't find out if there's an audience if they don't know it exists, so... It has to be put out there. I obviously, going into the release, I was like worried, oh my God, is this a huge miscalculation? Am I maybe the only person that really wanted to see these films? Like, why hasn't anybody else touched them? Did I make a mistake? And certainly in that first month when nobody was biting, I was kind of worried. Because then I say to myself, you know, just how many people are there that are just like me who want to take the chance, who want to, you know, kind of expand their horizons. But no, I'm feeling very hopeful that more and more people are going to get to see this film and that will provide me with the means to continue on and to do more releases.
And that's probably, you know, the reason why we wanted to have you on as well is to give you some exposure so that people are starting to learn about this and, you know, and give you an audience, because like we said, man, these movies are fucking fantastic. Horror fans, you're going to love Funeral Siniestro. Action fans, Hong Kong fans, you guys are going to love Triangulo de Oro. There's something for everybody on this release. So,
absolutely.
If you haven't bought it yet, fucking buy it, man.
Yeah. I don't know how many times already since, like, you know, this release was like, hey, have you got this already? And then I'm like, what is it? And then it's a link to the Petroglyph Media site. I'm like, yeah, not yet, but it looks cool. And then when I bought it, people were still asking, I'm like, yeah, it's cool, buy it. Like, what are you doing? Like, no, don't buy that, buy this.
when I posted it on my Letterboxd account, I immediately saw five people that follow me added it to their watch list. So
yeah,
that's all it takes is word of mouth. So
exactly. So again, if you're listening and if you still haven't bought it, buy it. Go to petroglyphmedia.com, click add to cart, and Anthony will ship it out to you right away. And then that's the thing. Anthony, you shipped this out really quick too.
Well, the thing about that is I was unemployed at the time. So,
so for all the losers that are moving next, you guys are going to have to wait a while.
Nah, but you got your big companies and so forth, you know, and then they have delays, you know, whatever reason. And it's like, hey, this one guy, he shipped it out right away. It's already on my doorstep.
I'm trying to always think from the collector's standpoint as myself. What do I enjoy? So that's why you might have noticed that movie is like wrapped beyond belief in bubble wrap.
Yeah. In a box, bubble wrapped, and it came quick.
Like the first time when I shipped out the first package, I handed it over to the postman at the post office and just like chucked it behind his back.
Oh my god.
I was like, oh my god. Because he probably felt like how light it was and thought it was nothing. I was like, oh my god, I gotta make sure that, you know, this can withstand anything.
Yeah.
You're gonna get that first email. Motherfucker, my case was broken. I want a refund.
And the slipcase is quality. You're not gonna see no dings either. I don't want people being like, oh, mine came with a ding. It's like, nah, mine came out pretty pristine. So it's well taken care of. Like I said, this is a disc for the fans made by a fan. So
yeah, my
a lot of love right there.
I try to get the family involved. So my son makes it, he'll make the boxes, but I'm like, you can't touch the slip covers. He's like, what?
All right. Awesome. Damn. Even the family's involved. There we go.
Yeah. That's how you do it, man. That's how
awesome,
you do it.
Awesome. Awesome.
Well, we're winding down here. So Anthony, where can the listeners find you? Shout yourself out, you know, link yourself, all your social media and all that stuff.
Yeah. God, I'm so new to social media because I only made an Instagram for this account specifically. I think it's at Petroglyph Media. I think that's what my handle is or whatnot. Literally, I've been trying to stay away from social media, but this is definitely a business that requires interaction.
No, yeah, for sure.
I hate, so you can ask Armando. Before we started this podcast, I had been off of social media for what, like 3 years or something?
Yeah,
and I was like, all right, I got to get back on it.
I think around the time I started talking to Joe, he didn't even have Instagram. Like, you know, he disabled it or whatever. He just didn't have it.
It's so crucial nowadays. Like, and as silly as social media can be and is, it's so crucial and necessary to promote yourself. You know, mm-hmm. So follow, guys, Petroglyph Media, petroglyphmedia.com. I don't know. What else? What's left to say?
Do you have any plans for the second release, or you're still like braining it out, or what's going on?
There are some films. I just don't want to, I don't want to mention them on the simple fact that God forbid somebody else from another label is listening and says, ooh, we have more.
Let's snipe
that. Oh, okay, but you have an idea.
Keep that up.
Okay. There's definitely a few films in play that I just got to do a little more digging and find out who owns the rights to them and see if I can find elements to them. But there are definitely, I do have plans to continue on. Might not, you know, nobody should expect, you know, monthly release announcements anytime soon. I'm not at that level yet, but this will not be the last you hear from me. I will not quit. I'll definitely be
like movie. I said, whatever it is, if it's an Eddie Murphy movie, I'll buy it. If it's Beverly Hills Cop, I'll buy it. No, I'm just kidding.
All right, well, you guys have heard it here. Petroglyph Media, petroglyphmedia.com, Funeral Siniestro, Triangulo de Oro, two Colombian classics that are waiting to be rediscovered by you. So show some support, follow, buy the movies, and man, hopefully people enjoy the episode.
Thank you guys for having me on.
Yeah, thank you, Anthony.
Empecé a hacer cine con el ánimo de no llenarme de plata. Yo, palabra que no. A mí yo quería, yo vivía feliz y dichoso de ver las colas en los, que ahí las tengo filmadas, colas en los teatros para entrar la gente a ver mi cine. Esa era mi satisfacción y será mi satisfacción.
Maestro, muchas gracias por acompañarnos aquí en Cinema 20.1.
Qué pena que me alargué.
No.
Señores del programa, por favor, crean en el más allá, crean en los milagros, porque yo vi en esta película de Funeral un milagro. Y el que diga que no, qué pena, pero yo no me voy para atrás.